Today on Seculo, new evidence of Biden family corruption revealed.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
There is plenty to talk about today on Seculo. We want to hear from you as well at 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. First up, Comer makes the announcement that we were waiting for when he said to the Department of Justice, hey, before any charges come down to Hunter Biden, you may want to know about what we did research on with 20 different LLCs. All created during the time that President Biden was vice president, and at least $10 million sent to those LLCs. But, you know, when you split all that down, you're talking about keeping those transactions at a much smaller amount and kind of a complicated web. So we know that there was kind of a middleman, and then it would go back out to different Biden family members, at least 9 different family members. Now, it was not clear today if that ever went directly to Vice President Biden. We know that the whistleblower who's come forward and said that there's a FBI, that there was a confidential informant, and the FBI has a document alleging that. We don't know if the FBI ever did an investigation, that they do allege that that there was direct payment to then Vice President Biden here, which would not be unusual if you were vice president to make sure you never got the check directly because you were under some watch. Though what it appears here is that everybody was like, you know, Hunter goes on all these trips. They do it pretty blatantly. Yeah. And he goes off and then he goes and meets with these people. So it was interesting today. Romania came up for the first time.
Which is interesting because Romania, which is also noted for unbelievable corruption.
Similar to a Ukraine kind of country and how it's run.
But an ally of the United States. So it's an interesting dynamic. Let me tell you what's there and what's not there. What's there is 20 LLCs formed, which is not illegal. Okay. Let's be clear. You can form LLCs. $10 million, roughly it looks like, came into these accounts over a period of time. Again, not illegal. The question really is here, and it does not appear to be, there's no evidence, at least that's been presented, that this went directly to the then sitting vice president of the United States or even subsequently. They don't have that evidence. Is you don't know what was done for those funds. In other words, what was the activity for the funds. And people are making a big deal out of it. I want to be cautious on this just because, you know, and I said this at our pre-meeting, I'm a defense lawyer by training. So I'm always looking at what's the defense. Like they say, well, some of the money that went into the LLCs ultimately went to some grandkids. Well, if the money came into the LLC and they pay tax on it, the LLC can distribute it any way they want. So what we got to be careful is what's the issue? And the issue is what was done for those services?
Yeah, why was it worth $10 billion to pay those LLCs at all? We also know that in probably a smarter move at the time, Hunter Biden paid many of the bills while he was vice president. So maybe he never had to directly transfer the money to Vice President Biden at the time, now President Correct. Biden's account, but he paid the mortgage
right
on the house. So Hunter would pay the mortgage, and Hunter would make the payments that were necessary. He kind of took care of the family and the family business so that bills that were getting paid and so – his dad, it wasn't even on his dad's radar, which is, I think, how Vice President, now President Biden says, I don't know anything about this because he wasn't even paying the bill. Now, he knows that he was bringing Hunter on the trips. He knows that Hunter was going to meet with business people. I mean, take a list of what happened. And again, these are countries that are a little bit off the radar of everyday news. We'll play it when we come back from the break. But it's always interesting that Hunter goes everywhere, still is going everywhere. And suddenly, you know, returns from these countries with a business deal. So he gets there on taxpayer dime. I mean, there's certainly the other part of this, which would be the DOJ investigation side of it, would be, okay, what did Hunter do during those meetings? What did he promise he could get done for that money? You know, that would be the key. What did he promise his family could do?
That's what they'd have to establish criminality. That's what they would have to show, some kind of illegal transaction.
Right.
Having LLCs, getting money from Chinese businesses, is not in and of itself illegal.
No, a lot of U.S. companies are doing business with them right now.
Exactly right.
So you have to be careful about how far you go, and also you'd have to have a DOJ that's going to investigate it. Well, we want to hear from you. What do you think? 1-800-684-3110. We'll be right back. back to Sekio. We are taking your calls to 1-800-684-3110. So Romania came up this morning. This was the press conference by Jim Comer, chairs the Oversight and Accountability Committee. Here's the actual report they put out. This is an ongoing investigation. This is just a phase of the report. They thought this time they wanted this out before there was any movement by the U.S. attorney on Hunter Biden. And I think what they are trying to do as Congress is say, you know, when you take action, and if you take action on Hunter Biden and it's the gun registration or gun application and a tax that wasn't paid properly from Burisma, the Burisma days, and you ignore all of this, you better be able to explain why none of this made it into an indictment. Why none of this? You know, the 20 different LLCs and $10 million, most of which he was directing. I mean, that was the one key this morning, was that Hunter Biden and his buddy Rob Walker played this key role. So, and again, he's got another friend who's in trouble too, Devin Archer, who's in trouble. Got Alec going in, money coming out. Now, again, a fair charge up until the Trump days wasn't even really enforced.
Correct.
Then they started putting people in solitary confinement over it. I mean, ask Paul Manafort if he should have registered as a foreign agent. But there was this whole discussion over, does everybody have to register? Does only one person at the office have to register? Now people are very careful and very protect. They basically all register. So we have a process under our law where some of this you can do legally, especially Hunter. As long as the vice president at the time, who is now president, wasn't actually making policy decisions because of who was paying his son. If he was, that's where the seriousness goes to another level. So, of course, you got to pay taxes. Of course, you have to comply with the law and the foreign registration laws. But the third part, and the biggest part in the United States, and in the bigger picture, I think, is to the voter. It's, do we want leaders like this who literally have been in public service their whole life and have been enriching themselves through the public service? I mean, it kind of makes sense how members of Congress go in making $180,000 a year and then leave Congress and somehow they've made millions and millions. But most of them will admit they don't have laws restricting that.
No, I mean,
the biggest insider issue, trade does apply to them and things like that.
Well, that's true.
There are people who want to reform that. They talked about it today at the press conference. Some of the problem is that they have laws that are way too loose on the executive branch.
Remember that the basis upon which a subpoena can issue for all this information is a legitimate legislative purpose. The legitimate legislative purpose here is this may well be transactions that happen, but they also may not be illegal criminally or even a violation of civil law in the United States Code. So what Congress has to look at is if this kind of transaction can happen where you've got the family of a vice president getting all of these assets, and you can imagine if this was, you know, Trump's family getting all these assets, you would look at, you know, is there a law violation here? And the problem that you've got right now is they said it at their press conference that there is not. They don't have a particular violation of law at this point. They've got questions. I don't think this, by the way, delays the Hunter Biden indictment that's forthcoming, which is probably mostly tax charges. I don't think that this, I don't see how this impacts that.
Yeah. This will be, again, unique to see how it plays out. What we always have warned the whole time is that you don't want to claim that you have more than you can deliver.
Did they hear, do you think?
I think it was close. They admitted today, this is complicated, you know, even to get it out into a press conference, because you're talking about 20 different LLCs, 8 years that they're focused on, which when he was vice president. Transactions that, again, because there's so many different LLCs, the transactions, each transaction was fairly small on a scale of like, it wasn't like all $10 million came in through two transactions.
Right.
They came in through thousands here. I think with one transaction, it took three different payments to equal $1 million over 3 or 4 months. So in some sense, they were watching how that money was coming in.
Well, that's because
obviously they were spreading it out through LLCs. But again, if you're taking advantage of tax law that's legal, that's not a crime. Obviously, that's the opposite of a crime. You're just taking advantage of the
let me
law.
Say something also about these special, suspicious activity reports. They're called SARs. You'll see those come up. I mean, They made a big deal about that with President Trump, that there were SARs issued regarding him. Most of you that are listening, if you've got an unusual transaction, one of our lawyers has family in Canada, they send money in from Canada to the United States, maybe a gift, that could trigger a suspicious activity report. So SARS get triggered easily. I'm not trying to diminish this, because it certainly raises a lot of questions. I mean, there's no doubt it raises a lot of questions. I always look at this both as a defense lawyer and even as a prosecutor and saying, what crime? Remember when we were representing President Trump, I would go on air and say, so you had Anderson Cooper pounding you with these questions, right? And you'd say, okay, Anderson, tell me what rule, law, or regulation has been violated. And they never could come up with one. I'm afraid that based on the information we have right now, that's still the problem.
Yeah, but they even mentioned ethics today.
When I say I'm afraid, I mean, it's just where the evidence is.
When we talk about ethics, again, you can talk about, listen, I mean, you can impeach over much less, but would you do it? I don't think Republicans should. I think that this whole idea of impeachment is ridiculous, that Democrats start impeaching over anything and everything just because you feel like it. I mean, so just because you can. The second part is, I get a little nervous when they start talking about ethics is the first problem, because I like talking about criminal activity. Like, if you're going to get rid of people, it better be criminal activity, not just I don't like their ethics.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that standard, then none of our guys are getting elected either. Because, I mean, they're politicians. They're human beings.
Well, you have George Santos has been indicted.
Yeah, what happened to President Trump yesterday? I mean, it's pretty tough stuff.
Yeah.
It's kind of a weird charge, because half you know, it's a civil case, and they said half of what she alleges is true, half is untrue. It's weird that the jury kind of did that. But, you know, again, that's all just goes to the voter gets to decide, right? I think this information is more likely for that purpose than it is anybody.
All right, but politically, does this move the needle on anybody?
I don't think people love the fact that their politicians are taking in $10 million in office and then it's being spread out through their
family.
From the Chinese government. Yeah. I think there's ways to, well, it wasn't ever directly from the Chinese government.
Okay,
it wasn't ever
right.
directly from the Romanian government. So that takes out the
foreign agent registration.
I will play this sound. This is like what they explained would happen. And I think, you know, some of this is, this just confirmed what we all already kind of thought about Hunter Biden. I mean, Lord, we knew he was on the board of a Ukrainian oil company, and the vice president had the prosecutor fired who was looking into the company.
Right.
So some of this, I think some of the worst stuff we already knew. But take a listen. This is how they said like things went down in Romania.
While Vice President Biden was lecturing Romania on anti-corruption policies, in reality, he was a walking billboard for his son and family to collect money. Hunter Biden and his associates capitalized on a lucrative financial relationship with a Romanian national who was under investigation for and later convicted of corruption in Romania. The Bidens received over $1 million for the deal. And 16 of the 17 payments to their associates' account that funneled the Bidens' money occurred while Joe Biden was vice president.
So I mean, there you go. That was an interesting one. 17 payments to get to $1 million. So, I mean, it feels like the guys knew that they were doing something that they didn't want to.
That's why you have all the LLC. Although LLCs in and of themselves are not illegal.
But I mean, you know, you're still paying the taxes on that money. So cutting it up into smaller payments doesn't mean you're paying less taxes. It just means you're not getting as much attention.
Here's
on
what
this,
I want
right?
us. Yes.
They don't get as much attention.
Correct. But let me tell you what I don't want us to be. Adam Schiff.
No. We don't want to be.
You know, Adam Schiff had the smoking gun on Donald Trump and he had nothing. No evidence. Nothing. Right, so Comer's got more than that. He's got at least transactions that are suspicious. But let's not amp this up to a level that's not realistic for you, the listener, for our members at the ACLJ. This is not going to result in the removal of, let me be clear, none of this is resulting in the removal, and you're not going to like what I'm going to say, but I'm going to say it because it's truthful. None of this is resulting in the removal of Joe Biden as president of the United States.
I don't think this has risen to even a legitimate impeachment.
I don't either.
Yet. I mean, because you have to have the members of Congress, I think, would agree, because they're not moving for impeachment. He didn't say that today.
Nope.
So don't just take my word for it. Comer also. What they said was, they have the money. They don't know why. I mean, they can only speculate on, and again, you speculate as the influence peddling, but influence peddling then has to violate an actual law to be criminal. Now, on Hunter, it looks like it's where he got in trouble is not paying taxes on some of that international money. And then, so that was the $400,000 for prison. That's a clear crime. And then falsifying an application for a firearm, which is a federal crime. I mean, those are just clear, straightforward crimes. They're not major.
No.
I mean, the tax ones get bigger and bigger as the money gets bigger, so that could be an issue. But I think there's no indication he hasn't paid it back now. So again, what I think we have to look at is what is the next Congress is going to have a very tough time getting to that next step.
Very difficult.
Because that's really
why it's
a deal.
Go to DOJ, and it's not going to be. They're not investigating this.
Merrick Garland. That's, you're going to put it the faith in Merrick Garland to do this work.
With 16 months left
so
in
who
their
gets
administration,
to decide? It's all ultimately. You put this forward so that voters can decide.
Well, I think that's
they
what
did
this
that
is.
About Donald Trump too.
Of course they did.
You put him through the ringer, and then you say,
"You decide."
What do you think, Americans? And I think, listen, some of it seemed outrageous with Donald Trump. Some of it worked by just piling on. Some of it did work. People said, "I can't take this anymore." Now he's been able to turn that around. I think with the New York DA, and say, "Look at what they really are doing to me. They make up new laws to try and take me to court." And then people said, you know what? Maybe he was right the whole time. So it goes back and forth. We'll be right back on Secular. Back to Secular. Second half hour coming up. Tulsi Gabbard is going to be joining us. And there is an explosive. I actually think it's more explosive than what Comer announced today. And that's that the CIA, not just former CIA officials, but now current people who are working at the CIA, when they asked about that letter, we're actually calling other people, former CIA agents, and putting pressure on them to sign the letter.
And not getting your book cleared until you don't.
The actual CIA involved in the Hunter Biden letter. Not former. Current.
While they were working for Donald Trump.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about that with Tulsi and, this, and get into that in the second half hour of the broadcast. I do want to take one of the calls that came into on what Comer did announce today and his team. Tim from Tennessee Online 2. Hey, Tim.
Yeah, guys. So thanks for the call. First of all, I own companies that work foreignly. We take payments from companies and even some governments on foreign work that we do. And every payment that comes in, every transaction, we have a mountain of paperwork that we have to follow to be able to do reporting and what that's for. And so my question goes back, and Jay, I agree with you. I think this is kind of like, I don't think it's going to go nowhere, but I think it is smells a little bit like what happened before with the Democrats of really just wasting time and money. But what do we think of how have they gotten that information from the Hunter?
So, Tim, here's what's interesting. There's no allegation that it wasn't properly reported.
No.
Right? They did not allege.
No,
I know what you're talking about. Foreign transactions, you file the foreign transaction reports. There's no evidence that they didn't do that here, at least not that's come forward yet.
No, definitely not. In fact, I mean, they got all this from mainstream banks. It wasn't like these were like I said, briefcases of cash, which is what you think about when you think about corruption in Eastern Europe or in Africa, places in those kind of countries that you think, oh, you're taking the cash, you're not reporting it. Hunter is in trouble over that with Burisma, but that was a specific salary that he was taking there. I think it was about $400,000. This bigger amount, that was never an allegation today that it wasn't being reported. It was that it was so small and it was done through so many different LLCs that putting it together is a spider web. I mean, it's like putting together, and then you have to say, is it worth putting it together? Which is what Tim was talking about. We will see.
Politically, maybe, but probably not legally.
Yeah, I think that there are things that you politically do because you put it forward to the American people. They're not always a crime. You can actually vote for people based off ethics. You can't prosecute them, but you can vote for someone based off ethical or unethical decisions. So I don't think putting this information forward is a bad thing. Unless they did it to us. You've got to respond, and you have to be as aggressive. But I do want to go to some of what's happening around the world, too. Jeff Balaban, who oversees our office, ACLJ Jerusalem, is joining us now. And Jeff, to say it lightly, a barrage of activity today in Israel, specifically out of Gaza.
Yeah, Jordan. So Israel launched Operation Shield and Arrow in response to rockets coming into Israel from Gaza last week. And today, there's been a big response. Rockets have flown over, so far around 300 just today, from Gaza into Israel. They've reached Tel Aviv and the towns and suburbs surrounding it. They expect the situation to get worse. I'm here in Jerusalem where they've opened up the bomb shelters. And right now, what's interesting is that this is coming from an Iranian proxy. One of America's enemies has launched an attack, essentially through a proxy, on our ally Israel.
Interesting about this, Jeff.
So I want to point real quick. So they've actually, because usually these are kind of on the, I mean, it's not to say, but they're kind of part of the Western Israel, so they don't...
Or Golan, yeah.
And people aren't as nervous about in Jerusalem specifically. But you used to say that they've actually opened up the bomb shelters in Jerusalem.
That's right. I got a call earlier this morning. The building I'm staying in, they wanted to make sure that I knew the access to the bomb shelter, et cetera. And they opened them up in Tel Aviv, and I know plenty of people have been using them in areas around Tel Aviv. So far, we've had no sirens or any reason to use them here in Jerusalem. But yes, they're expecting the situation to get worse, and they basically, everyone's on alert.
You know, the interesting aspect of this, Jeff, is while that's going on, of course, you got the United Nations, which is basically at every opportunity they have, whether it's the Human Rights Council or these other entities, trying to condemn Israel. You got the International Criminal Court in The Hague, where we've been on behalf of Israel, we've been there on behalf of the United States too, advocating for what I consider justice. I mean, it's the most stable democracy in the Middle East is Israel, yet they're the ones that are condemned the most. But here's the irony. While rockets are falling, I don't see the United Nations condemning Hamas and Hezbollah for attacking civilians in Israel.
No, of course not, because, you know, you saw also there was the news that the European Union, again, our great friends at the European Union, decided that Itamar Ben-Gvir, Israel's Minister of National Security, wouldn't be allowed to present at a symposium in the European Union because he's too offensive for them, right? But while rockets, as you say, are falling here, there's very little condemnation. I haven't seen any yet about this. And all the focus is on the fact that it's, you know, the old cycle of violence. It's really Israel's fault for reacting to the last barrage of rockets that fell in Israel.
And again, folks, we're taking your calls to 1-800-684-3110. Just to go one more time, Jeff, for our team, just to understand, you're in Jerusalem. You oversee our office there. This is a live report because of the conflict that's erupting. I mean, 300 rockets in one day. It's hard to put into words.
You've
Israel's a small country.
You've had them come in near you.
And they do have the Iron Dome. The Iron Dome was able to shoot down 60. Some don't make the. Some are so poorly made, they don't even make it all the way. But I don't, you know, it's almost like the world under like they, we don't act like how insane this is, that this is acceptable to the EU or the United Nations, that they just kind of shrug their shoulders.
Right. You know, Jay pointed out that Israel is a democracy. It's a liberal culture here. It's very, you know, Arabs, Jews live together here in Israel, generally tend to get along pretty well. And then when Israel gets attacked from the outside, all of a sudden it's because Israel is evil and Israel is an oppressor and apartheid, all this nonsense. The bottom line is it's always justifiable to attack Israel, and Israel's never justified in defending itself.
You know, last thing here, Jeff, and that is we have, of course, our offices in Jerusalem, ACLJ in Jerusalem. There, you mentioned the European Union issue. It's a big one. The anti-Semitic rhetoric coming out of the EU is, I think, in a very heightened capacity. And we're fighting, by the way, folks, at the United Nations, at the European Court of Human Rights, at the European where they have the European Congress, which is the European Parliament. But the fact of the matter is, this is an ongoing battle. It's a battle we've been engaged in for three decades. But let me tell you the good news. The good news is the capital of Israel is recognized now internationally as Jerusalem. So when we Golan Heights is recognized by the United States as part of the sovereignty of Israel. And that's because when we had the opportunity to get the policies changed, we worked and we did it, Jeff.
That's right. And right now, there's a big movement here to extend sovereignty over areas of Judea and Samaria. The Israeli public is supporting it. And I have a feeling that that's going to come up in the United States very soon. And I think we'll have something to say about it, Jay.
All right, Jeff Balaban in our office in Jerusalem. We got a lot more ahead. We're going to take calls, too, coming back from
the break. Yeah, that's right. 1-800-684-3110. Tulsi Gabbard is going to be joining us about the CIA. I mean, again, we talk about the weaponization of our government against us. And it... You know, it's one thing people have always joked about, you know, joked or even serious, taken seriously, the CIA getting involved in other countries' elections. How about right here in the United States, where they're supposed to have no jurisdiction whatsoever? They're not supposed to be doing anything. But what we do know now is that, you know, they'll approve a letter in less than a couple of hours, and they'll also start asking other former CIA who happen to be calling that day, who they're holding up their book for review, and they say, you know, hey, about to approve your book. Will you sign this letter that says Hunter Biden's laptop is Russian disinformation? We do, you know, just over the phone. No research done. And people feel like they had to. We'll take your calls on that too. 1-800-684-3110.
keeping you informed and engaged. Now more than ever. This is Seculo. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
All right, welcome back to Seculo. Second part, and I think this is actually maybe more explosive than what Comer had to announce today, in the sense of, I think for most people, they know about the Hunter Biden. They know the money from overseas. Maybe the extent this morning that was announced was, again, shocking and surprising to some folks. But if you've been following the Bidens closely, now a lot of voters don't, but if you have been following them closely, this is kind of like what you'd expect. And they don't have the smoking gun. They don't know the crime that was committed. There was no allegation of that this morning. And I always get nervous. You don't want to, again, end up like Adam Schiff over and over again saying you've got evidence that you don't have, and making serious accusations against people and not being able to deliver. Now, some of that is because Congress, that's not really their role. That they don't really get to be the ones who then do the second part of the research to see if the crime has been committed. That's supposed to be investigated by Department of Justice. I mean, I think there's certainly enough there to open investigation because of all the different LLCs and the money. So, but again, we will see where that goes. Comer says there's going to be more. We'll see where that goes. And we'll see, again, if it does impact at all Hunter Biden's indictment, which he asked there to be no movement on that until the press conference and release of the document today. There's another document, though, out. This is from the House Weaponization Committee, which part of the subcommittee that's part of the Judiciary Committee. And here, the Hunter Biden statement, this is, again, how senior intelligence community officials in the Biden campaign worked to mislead American voters. We knew about all the former officials, Mike Morrell, I mean, literally former CIA directors, who were putting together the letter, they said, for political purposes, to help Joe Biden get elected so he'd have a talking point in a debate 3 days after the letter came out. So the letter goes out October 19th. We actually talked about with Rick Grenell that Morrell was going around telling people he was going to get preclearance, and the general assumption was, even at the beginning, it was like, no way he could have gotten that because he didn't go to them in time. Well, now we know the CIA was clearing it in a couple hours, it looked like.
Yep.
And not only were they clearing it in a couple hours, because that's one thing, if they went through the letter and said there was nothing in here that was actually classified, that was just opinion. Even if you believe that, okay, the second part, there's testimony from a former CIA officer. He was getting his book reviewed, which is a pretty normal process. If you're a former intelligence official, you wanted to write a book. So he put his book through that same committee. And on the same day, he gets called about his book and says, hey, we're about to approve it. He gets asked by a CIA staff member who oversees their preclearance office, will you sign this letter saying that the Hunter Biden laptop was misinformation? So now we know that there were people actually working at the CIA, not just signing their names in the letter, not just former CIA, but recruiting people to sign their name to the letter, Dan.
Yeah, and if you get the letter, by the way, if you sign the letter, we're going to get you through this pre-publication clearance quicker. To me, that's a bigger story than the Comer stuff, because this entire narrative ends up being totally wrong. So you know what I want to say to those 51 security officials, intelligence officials? You got it completely wrong. So none of them have ever yet said, you know what, we got that one wrong. They've acknowledged that they didn't have real evidence. They've acknowledged that they didn't back check anything.
If you're just playing politics.
But they filed a FISA warrant against an American citizen based on this nonsense. Okay? Then they go after the laptop that comes out and they say this is a Russian, that's Russian disinformation, more Russia stuff. None of that was true. None of it was true. That's the problem. Our intelligence officials can't get it right. That's dangerous.
Yeah, at first it's like, are they just incompetent? And now you start realizing they're playing pure politics.
Unbelievably so.
You add those things both together, and you have a really ineffective agency. We're going to talk about it with Tulsi Gabbard. Talk about trusted institutions, and the CIA should not be messing with our elections. The fact that you can just say that as a fact right now, not as a conspiracy theory, but as a fact.
Yeah.
That the CIA is meddling,
by the way,
in U.S. elections.
As we've been on, I get a red alert whenever rockets go off in Israel. While we've been on, I'm talking about in the last minute, there has been 10, including where you and I were, where we were under a rocket attack, Ashkelon, now. And we've got our office in Jerusalem working on all this, folks.
That's right. Support the work of the ACLJ, ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org. We'll be back with Tulsi Gabbard. You know, it's one thing to say we all expect that, you know, government institutions can be up to no good, right? I mean, I think that's pretty common. And especially, I think all Americans, I think that's pretty bipartisan, is that sometimes you question, especially even the intelligence community, their involvement in activities internationally in elections. But I don't think we've ever been able to say directly here, which you can now today, and say that we know that there were CIA staff recruiting people to join a letter that would directly impact a presidential election of the United States of America. So we now know that there was a person in the pre-clearance office at the CIA, and that person was the same person who they sent the letter to get it cleared, which they sent to him same day. That's a little bit questionable. But they also clear CIA agents, former agents, like their books, if they write a memoir. And someone who actually was calling in about their memoir was asked by a CIA staff member in that office on the same day to sign the Hunter Biden laptop letter. So this wasn't a former CIA agent. This is not a former intelligence community official. This is not just someone inside the CIA signing the letter. This is actually someone at the CIA recruiting people to sign the letter. I want to go to our senior political and military analyst, Tulsi Gabbard. Tulsi, just right off the bat, to me, that is the kind of shocking part of even saying it without even, it's not a conspiracy at all. We now know it as fact that someone at the CIA was recruiting people to sign the Hunter Biden letter.
Yeah, Jordan, I would venture to say that if there's one, there's likely more. You know, there's so many issues to address here, the most dangerous of which you're talking about very correctly, which is how Central Intelligence Agency, these former intelligence community officials, essentially stole our democracy. The irony in all of this, in this letter that they were recruiting people to sign in the days leading up to a presidential debate, the weeks leading up to a consequential presidential election, was essentially claiming that Hunter Biden's laptop could have been Russian disinformation. No facts, no evidence, nothing to say this. We see now, you know, this this CIA employee read the letter, took a few minutes to read the letter to the guy on the phone saying, hey, do you want to sign this? So there clearly wasn't any research done or, hey, show me the evidence. Why do you guys think this may be? They were trying to help Vice President Joe Biden, give him a good talking point in the debate, claiming that Hunter Biden's laptop could have been Russian disinformation, when in fact, what they were engaging in with this letter was a very clear manufacturing of disinformation to sway the outcome of an American presidential election. You know, yes, this active CIA employee clearly violated the Hatch Act, which prohibits federal civil service employees from engaging in political activity. That should be one of the many levels of accountability that should take place. But here we are now, we're heading into yet another presidential election next year. And yet these very, very serious issues that we assume happen in banana republics and authoritarian countries and in other parts of the world, we would hope that this would never be an issue here in the United States of America. And yet, here we are. And this is an issue that the American people, those who are watching, those who are listening, need to understand the seriousness of as we head into this next election, and to hold our elected leaders accountable to bring about action to make sure that this cannot be allowed to happen again.
So you've got this situation. David Kerians, he is a former CIA analyst. He's an author of a number of books. If you go on Amazon and look him up. So he's got a book and he's got to get it pre-cleared through the pre-publication classification review board. That sounds like a process that would take some time. And if you were David Kerians, I bet it did. If you were Morrell and you just sent it in, as Mike Morrell did, on the same day and basically said, this is good to go, we just need you to rubber stamp it, they rubber stamp it for you. Now, he's a former CIA director, so again, all of those politics going on there. But David Kerians says he's on the phone about his book. And while he's on the phone with the book, a staff member affiliated with the pre-publication classification review board informed him, and these are the people that are going to green light whether or not his book gets to go out, of the existence. So they say, hey, there's this Hunter Biden laptop letter. Would you sign it? And he ends up signing it. And I mean, I wonder too if like the inference there is because he felt like he had to, since they were the ones deciding if his book was going to come out. But one of the things, Tulsi, we're trying to get to as well, and we're working on the FOIA right now, and it's always a war when you go to a FOIA with the intel community, but it's worth fighting, is how far up the chain? Who else knew at the CIA? Did Gina Haspel know that she had staff at the CIA asking people to sign this letter?
You know, Jordan, I have friends who have tried to send their or have sent their books through that review process. And the common, literally every single person I know who has done that has complained about how long it takes and how arduous that whole process is, even if it comes out the back end saying, yeah, okay, there were no issues here. Nothing needs to be redacted. So the timing of this obviously seems pretty suspect. I think there were some questions, as you mentioned, whether or not it even got approved because it happened so quickly and the letter was published the very next day. We need to know the truth about this. We need to know the truth about exactly who was involved from top to bottom, recognizing the serious consequences of the weaponization, the politicization of not only a federal agency, but the Central Intelligence Agency to sway an American election. Former deputy chief of the CIA said very directly that when asked, why did you do this? He said, well, it could have been Russian disinformation. And I wanted to help Vice President Joe Biden. He wanted to give him that talking point that he could use in the debate that was coming up. That's why this was such an urgent request. The abuse of power, the flagrant abuse of power in the face of the American people is one of the most deeply concerning things here because it shows they just don't care. They don't care about the Constitution. They don't care about the American people. They think that they can get away with anything. And unfortunately, in this case, what we're seeing so far is they are getting away with this. That's why accountability and consequences are so important, because if nothing happens, what's to stop anyone else in any of these different federal agencies from saying, hey, look, these guys got away with it. They helped sway, potentially sway an election. We should do the same. On any one side, it doesn't matter Democrat or Republican or which candidate you're trying to help. This is wrong, and it undermines the American people's faith and trust in our democracy, and that their votes will be the ones that actually decide elections.
This is something, again, Congress plays as a former member of Congress. They have a really important role to play when they learn this kind of information, because they've got the power to basically force reforms of these because of the financial power that Congress has. But it seemed like what every time that you push like an intelligence agency, what they come back with, and I'm sure you experienced this as a member of Congress, even when it was things like the Patriot Act and, hey, did this go too far for too long and maybe we need to reform things like the FISA court, is they come back and basically say, you're going to put too many people's life, you're putting America at risk, so you can't reform us. Don't question us, basically. Just keep signing the checks. We're doing the right thing. And now we're finding out they are, not only are they not doing the right thing, it's not just being bad at their job, but doing the worst thing, which is trying to sway U.S. elections.
Hey, Jordan, we've gotten to this point where the perception and in some cases the reality is that the intelligence community believes that they are above the law. And that in a democracy is a very, very, very dangerous thing. You know, we've heard the Chuck Schumer soundbite that he made when warning Donald Trump against messing with the intelligence community because they will screw you 10 times through Sunday or whatever it was he said along those lines. But you're right. As a member of Congress, even when we'd ask questions, I'd ask to see information, get more details on a specific foreign policy issue or an issue related to national security, very often we were given vague answers or no answers at all, limiting Congress's ability to actually hold the intelligence community accountable. And so as we look at this path forward, as we look at the reauthorization of the Patriot Act that is coming up here very soon, as members of Congress are looking at this, we're seeing data and information that's showing the FBI's warrantless surveillance of Americans happened at an incredibly high level. Mistaken surveillance is the word they're using. 30% of the searches that they did in 1 year were on American citizens. This is against the law and with no warrant. This is against the law. Is there any accountability? I have yet to see any accountability on those, that abuse and that illegal activity. And yet again, now as they're going before Congress for this reauthorization, The intelligence community is saying, hey, don't worry, guys, we've fixed it ourselves. We recognize there were some problems. We've fixed it. There have been problems with this abuse of power and the violation of civil liberties and the Patriot Act and these secret FISA courts almost since its inception, always in the name of national security. And don't you dare ask, don't you dare question, don't you dare challenge these authorities, because if you do, then you obviously don't care about the safety, security of the American people. And that is the arrogance of those who continue to perpetuate these problems, is they ultimately, they don't care about the Constitution and our civil liberties. They care about their unbridled power and doing whatever they can to protect it.
Always appreciate your insight. I think the good part about this coming out, if there's a good part about it, is that it does lift that facade of don't question us. We're always doing the right thing. And if you don't always agree, keep writing the check, and that you can be patriotic and still ask that question. You can love your country, love the Constitution, and ask those questions to the intelligence. Back to Secul. Yeah, I really do think when we were talking about Tulsi, we had to leave with the COBRA news because we know everyone's leading with that COBRA news. I think people are trying to figure out, okay, what did he exactly say? What did he not say? We always want to be fair and honest with you here, the ACLJ. How far did he go? How far are they away from, you know, alleging actual crimes and the specifics? And they were honest about that. They said, you know, we know that there's all these financial transactions. What we don't have is what they were for. And then what they were for would be the important part to know if the influence, you know, directly, where's the influence peddling? Did the Romanian business person pay you not to go after the DOJ, not to investigate him, even though he was being investigated in Romania? Stuff like that is what would, I think, lead to the next level. And I don't know that Congress can get to there. I think that a good DOJ could. Do you expect Merrick Garland to? No. So you've then got to leave it to the voters, right? And I think that's what you're ultimately doing with a lot of this information. Because while law works on actual laws and not just ethics and what seems right or wrong, and that's good for all of us, elections don't. You can decide not to elect a person because you think, you know what, they're just too shady for me. You can say, I don't really like the way that they're handling things. You as a voter just get to make your decision. Now, we hope that when we make that decision, it's not going to be influenced by the CIA. And we know it was in the last cycle. So when they say that, like, you can't be almost like an election denier, you can't question the election, I think you certainly can. Now, look, I'll bring you, if the CIA is getting involved in your elections, I think then you can question whether or not we have an election integrity in our country.
Yeah, I think that, look, if you look at the top list of things that are concerning our audience right now, it's one of the studies we've done. Election integrity is in the top five. It's sometimes in the top three of issues of importance. The economy usually is pretty high up there, as well as election integrity. Because regardless, there's been so much conversation around it that even if you're not someone who's what you would say an election denier, someone who thinks, if you even think, you know, Biden won the election fair and square, whatever, you've at least had the question now. You've at least been around that topic enough to at least have the conversation. Yep. People are asking those questions, and that's okay. It's okay to not just go in blindly, vote, and assume everything is going to be taken care of.
You do have to vote first. You do have to do that.
You do absolutely have to. But you know what I'm saying? It's okay to ask questions.
Bigger put questions, like who is influencing how people are voting?
Yeah.
That's what we're saying the CIA was. That's pretty just shocking to say just outright on a broadcast. I don't know if I ever thought I would just be able to say 100% CIA is influencing our election in the United States covertly. I mean, that's a huge statement. So we're paying them with our taxpayer dollars to tell us who to vote for?
Yeah, and it's just not.
And tell us what information. You're going to ban media outlets based off that letter, which they did?
We said the FBI, the CIA, these are things that were, up until fairly recent history, you should kind of universally praised. There was obviously always some controversy here and there. Their human stuff goes wrong, but it didn't seem like there was a top-line agenda.
Maybe RFK Jr. is right.
There maybe was agenda from individual people, but it didn't feel like as much as there was top-line agenda. Right. You know, agenda coming from everyone.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Yep. I mean, then you go into like what RFK Jr. said, who says, you know, you ask a lot of times the Kennedy family members, what do you think involved with your uncle's assassination? And he outright said it, CIA, this week.
Oh, so, I didn't see that.
I mean, yeah. I mean, so you start questioning those. You say, okay, that's always been around. Like when I was at GW, I had a professor that he was 100% on that.
Yeah.
That was not really a partisan thing to say that, by the way. Then it kind of became like Democrats became the government. And it's like a partisan thing to attack government. And so the Democrats, like Tulsi was bringing up, who was a Democrat, Chuck Schumer is defending the intel. That's not their job. Like, a member of Congress should be holding them accountable, not saying they're going to take you down, take a U.S. president down who questions whether or not what they're doing is right. The next, I do want to hit this too, because I think it's going to be the massive story.
Yeah, in the next 48 hours.
Probably. Yes, and we now know that this affects not just border cities, right? The immigration problem, Title 42 coming to an end, and President Biden admitting what is going to ensue. Take a listen.
Is the United States ready for the surge of people that's going to come across the border starting later this week?
I spent close to an hour with the Mexican president today. We're doing all we can. The answer is it remains to be seen. We've gotten overwhelming cooperation from Mexico. We also are in the process of setting up offices in Colombia and other places where someone seeking asylum can go first. So, but it remains to be seen. It's going to be chaotic for a while.
It remains to be seen. Yeah, if you're admitting already it's going to be chaotic, you're prepping people for a disaster. A win right now for them would be if it's not a complete disaster.
Yeah, but he's now said it's chaotic. He set the bar at chaotic.
That's what I'm saying.
So what does chaotic look like? Is the withdrawal of Afghanistan with chaotic and 13 people dead?
It was pretty chaotic. It's pretty chaotic at the border already.
Yeah. I mean, how many people have to lose their life?
Right.
Before it's not just, it's just going to be a little chaotic for a little bit.
Again, or maybe they're, I mean, I think it will get dramatically worse. Maybe their idea is make people's expectations that it's not going to be that bad. And then, or that it's going to be horrible. And then when it's not as horrible, they'll back off.
We know that they want a surge. Their long-term play is that they think this is going to help them politically. So you put up with the bad actors that come through. You even put up with the drugs. Because long-term, electorally, if you can legalize this community, long when Joe Biden's gone, but this is the Democrat view. It's obvious through Mayorkas. They're not getting rid of him. Now, he might go after the next administration. Maybe if it gets bad enough, it's chaotic. But so far, they haven't, because they agree. They want to fully transform the electoral base. They think this is the way to do it, by bringing people here illegally. And then one day they'll be legalized, which, by the way, has never happened for all these people living in the shadows. So you can almost call that a pipe dream.
Yeah.
And then they'll be so thankful that the Democrats did that they will vote Democrat. That is a pretty, again, it's a long-term political play, but it is a real political play. And that's very sad when we have members of Congress. It's not usual with Republicans, but we have Republican members of Congress. We had Bill Hagerty on. He's put forward the legislation four times to extend Title 42 because of fentanyl, saying that, okay, we got through the pandemic, but there's an epidemic.
Right.
And the same problem is that it comes through the southern border. So we want to give you, the federal government, that removal power, and the Democrats say no. We don't want it. So when they blame this on the Title 42 power coming to an end, Republicans have been willing to extend it for them.
And you can hear in that clip just when you saw those poll numbers come out saying people don't know if he's fit for the job, if he's able to keep going, you could just tell the exhaustion in his voice from just this moment. And this is a moment where you're going to really need to project strength. And what you're projecting is, and I mean this even physically, weakness.
Yeah. And Mayorkas blames Congress. Congress, who is saying, here, you can have more power. Take a listen.
I cannot overemphasize that our current situation is the outcome of Congress leaving a broken, outdated immigration system in place for over two decades, despite unanimous agreement that we desperately need legislative reform. It is also the result of Congress's decision not to provide us with the resources we need and that we requested.
Okay. You know what, the ACLJ, we support a strong border. And listen, should we have immigration reform? I think we'd all agree. That's not the problem at the border. The problem at the border is border security. They stopped building the wall. They stopped Remain in Mexico. And they're giving up the Title 42 power, which was very effective. Not great, but effective. And when Congress is trying to extend it for them, Mayorkas ignoring that, because they don't want that removal power, because that means they have to take the illegal immigrants out of the country. They don't get to stay here for and wait 10 years for their case. We're going to be filing a FOIA on the CIA. Support the work of the ACLJ, aclj.org.